Welcome to Pathways, a podcast by Grenadian STEAM. Here, we dive into the journey of Grenadians and West Indian professionals navigating their careers in the STEAM fields, both at home and in the diaspora. We discuss their failures, their successes, and their moments of learning with the goal of exposing interested listeners to the depth and wonder that is a career in STEAM. I'm your host and president of GrenSTEAM, Arlene Hayes. Join us. Press that subscribe or follow button on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a new episode. Crystal McDoom is currently a project manager at the University of Chicago in the U.S. She's an experienced construction management professional with 10 years of industry experience and a demonstrated history of working in higher education and healthcare market sectors. In her current role, she's responsible for managing the design, construction, budget, and schedule for the new buildings and renovations projects. This typically includes the oversight of architects, engineers, general contractors, and specialty consultants. Having graduated with honors with a Bachelor of Science degree in Architectural Engineering and a specialization in Construction Management from the Illinois Institute of Technology, Crystal is detail-oriented, organized, and hardworking. She has an excellent reputation for issue resolution, building relationships, and driving overall results. She's passionate about personal development, education, and opportunity equity. Although she resides in Chicago, her family remains in her home country of St. Lucia, and she misses them dearly. Outside of work, she enjoys practicing martial arts, as well as connecting with friends over a good meal. I hope you enjoy today's chat, and if you do, be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a review or drop us a note on social media and let us know what you want to hear more of. Hi, Crystal. Welcome to Pathways.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So, as we get started here, we're just going to introduce you to the people a little bit, to the listeners, let them know who you are, a little bit about where you're from, and then get into your story. You are originally from St. Lucia. Where in St. Lucia did you grow up?
I grew up in a town called Vieux-Fort or Vieux-Fort.
Okay.
And that's the south part of the island.
Right. Okay. And growing up in school, like primary, secondary school, whichever you remember and you're comfortable with, what were your school days like?
As a student, well, I can't really speak to primary school, but I know that I can generally say that I was a good student. In secondary school, I was more inclined to the math, science, and technical subjects. Wasn't much of a language person, didn't really Spanish and French. Not to say that's a bad path, it's just something that I wasn't good at or interested in. Generally, I would say I got good grades. I was always like in the top 5 or top 10 percentile of the class from primary school or infant primary and secondary school. So that's the extent of what I remember. Don't date me. That was a long time ago.
Okay, fair enough. And coming out of secondary school, so there would have come the time form 3 or you need to choose your subjects. Did you know at that point what you wanted to be in life, or were you just kind of going with what you enjoyed?
I absolutely knew what I was going to do. Like, who doesn't? but no, I kid. I didn't exactly know what I wanted to be, but it was a path of trial and error, I would say. In my secondary school, there were 5 different paths or streams that you could take. So you could dip them the math or the science, the technical, the arts, the business, and there was a fifth one that I just can't remember. And so you had to just pick one of those paths. And my brothers, I had two older brothers, and they had chosen the technical path. So during the process of, I guess, trying to figure it out, one, I wanted to be like my older brothers, like which little sister doesn't. And I was also good at math and science. So, and I was also good at drawing and sketching too. So after speaking to some teachers and my brothers, it just seemed to make sense. Like, hey, maybe architecture is a thing that, you know, I can do and I can explore. And so informed me to choose my subjects. I chose the technical path because I believed at the time I was going to be an architect. That's not exactly how it unfolded for me, but that's kind of where it all started.
Okay, let's get into that a little bit. Leaving secondary school and going into community college, you were going on the technical path with the idea of becoming an architect. And then you eventually went on to pursue a degree in the US, which you're, as you said, that kind of changed, your direction changed a bit. So between those two points, what happened for you to change your perspective?
Man, a lot of things happened. So I want to be transparent. So I left secondary school with the intention of, yes, I wanted to be an architect. And I would say from a very early age, I was a pretty determined person. And Arlene, I know you know me, so you know that that is true.
Yes.
So I was determined I wanted to be an architect, and I went to community college where the closest thing to architecture was architectural technology. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of my first classes, the lecturer walked in and she said, 95% of you in this room will never be an architect. And I was like, what? This woman doesn't know what she's talking about. Clearly doesn't know me. Well, become an architect. So she was right in that respect. But it's kind of kicked off a very interesting journey where I had, you know, lecturers that went to university in either Canada, UK, or the US. And so they started to broaden my perspective of what was out there. In terms of the industry and the different paths you can take, but I still wasn't convinced that I didn't want to be an architect yet. So after community college, I still wanted to do it, but my parents just didn't have the financial means to send me to university. Mm-hmm. I had to start working, because what else do you do if you can't go to university and you need to make a living, help support your family in some way? So I started working, or I tried to look for a job with an architect back home in Indonesia, but I couldn't get a job with an architect. So again, needed a job, and the opportunity that presented itself, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise, was I worked for a civil engineer, and there I got exposure to all of the different engineering disciplines. I got to work on various types of projects, from hotels to road design, and also in green deliberate in construction management. And then in that, I started to be curious, and I started asking the different professionals, like, you know, what do you do? And like really tried to dig in and understand what they did. And in that investigative process, I realized architects have a passion for design that I just don't have. And I can sketch and I can like reproduce things that I saw. Like if I saw a sketch, I could like reproduce it, but I couldn't just conceptualize from scratch. And so it dawned on me, like, architect is not the thing for me. So that made me a little bit confused. And so I started to, again, keep on asking questions and did research, the internet started to be a thing for be more widely available for us at the time. And so I started things, and then I came across this program called Architectural Science at a university based in Toronto. Ultimately, I didn't end up going to that university, but by the time the scholarship opportunity at Illinois Tech presented itself for me, I had already realized architecture wasn't a thing for me. And then Illinois Tech had recently started an architectural engineering degree program, and it just seemed like it was the right fit. It wasn't straightforward, as you can tell, based off of everything that I just said. It was a trial and error investigating, asking questions, being curious, being confused along the way. That's how I ended up with that degree. And ultimately, and we might, we'll likely get into this, but I didn't even end up doing design, the degree that I got, but I still ended up in this field. So it hasn't been a straightforward path at all.
Okay. So like you mentioned, you then got a scholarship to go to IIT in Chicago. Tell us about that transition from St. Lucia to Chicago, going into school, and then you can like start to talk about what exactly was your experience in architectural engineering. So this was a new program. Was it everything you expected? Tell us.
Yeah, that's two loaded questions.
That's a lot, yeah.
So my transition from St. Lucia to Chicago or Illinois Tech really wasn't easy. It was really, really hard for a couple of reasons. So the scholarship opportunity presented itself in July of 2010 to start an academic year of August 2010. So we literally had to go through the entire process in a month, from applying, doing the, you know, the whole admissions process, the essays and everything, getting transcripts, doing like a math proficiency test, going to Barbados to get our visas, also getting student loans because the scholarship didn't cover 100% of the of our tuition. It was only a portion of it. And so all of that had to go through in a month's time. And then, you know, different people needed support in different ways from the government to guarantee those loans. So anyways, that being said, I was working, I had a job, I'd been out of school for 3 years at that point, and I always wanted to go back to school and get my degree. But I just kept facing adversity and obstacle and challenges along the way over the 3 years that it just didn't happen. So I didn't know it was coming, but when it came, I just took a leap of faith and I was 3 years out of school. So the mindsets while you have when you're working versus the mindset you have when you're in school is very different. And so to jump from like working and jumping into school, like on the deep end, was a very difficult transition for me. And coming from that, also being away from family, you know, being away from the things and people that are very familiar to you, change is hard. And that was another big thing. The cafeteria food also was just not that great. And I know it sounds like a small thing, but when you come from a place where food is so flavorful and it's really good, and you go where in a space where they have to cater to so many different people with different dietary restrictions and so many allergies and stuff, then the food is pretty bland. So it was really bad.
Like this one comfort you can't have.
Exactly. The food provides comfort. So knowing from family was hard, and it was really a difficult transition. And then add on the Chicago winters, you know, again, Caribbean people, I love my sunshine. I still call me an island princess, even if it's been like 11 plus years. I love the warm weather, and the winter was really bad. So it was just a lot of change and a lot of cultural differences too. You know, not everything you see on TV related to the American culture is the same. And it was a lot. It was a lot to learn and adjust to in a short space of time. So I would say it was difficult for me. Mm-hmm. So that was the transition part.
So the degree itself, was there any type of transition there for you, like mentally, just what you were prepared for, what you were expecting, and what you actually got into?
Yeah, so a couple of things for me. I would say I didn't realize that I wouldn't like all of the subjects. It sounds weird to say that, but in my head, it was like, well, okay, in secondary school, I chose my stream. It was tailored to my interests. I did really well. I enjoyed all of it, and I enjoyed all of the subjects. Now I transitioned into something that was more specialized, focused on something that I was interested in and I liked, but it wasn't exactly, like, as I said, when I fell in love with that architectural science degree, it was a culmination of math, science, technology, architecture, and building technology. And I thought, like, hey, I'll just love all of this and I'll get it like that, and everything will be great and it will be amazing. And that's not what happened. There are several subjects, especially in my first year, that I really struggled with. I loved math and I loved calculus in community college, and I really struggled with getting the concepts because it was harder. Another level of calculus, and I struggled to get those concepts. I struggled to get concepts when it was related to chemistry. I didn't do chemistry in secondary school. So there are a lot of different things, that subjects that I did that I just really didn't like and I just really didn't enjoy. And I thought that was an interesting shift. Mm-hmm. But the information that I received was necessary for me to learn those things, even if I didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I can still use some of the concepts on a very high level in my job, even if I don't do design anymore, that I know enough to be dangerous in my job, but I didn't enjoy the classes or the subjects while I was going through it. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I didn't realize when it came to your undergraduate degree experience, how social and leadership roles play such an important part of the experience and beyond just your academic performance. You know, back home, they teach us like academics is key, and they always enforce like always try to excel and get good grades and that kind of stuff. Nobody really taught me, or I didn't know anything about, you know, leadership roles. I believe I've always been a natural leader. When I look back at my experiences, there are certain things that I did that took on the role of a leader and taking charge and taking responsibility at an early age. But nobody talked about that in school beyond being a in like primary or secondary school.
Right.
Plays such an important role, and I didn't realize that, and that was an interesting reframe for me too. And then the last thing I would say that's different, and none of this is like related particularly to the degree itself, but I think it's important for the overall college experience for people to understand, is that I thought college would be a whole much more fun than it actually was.
Okay, so speaking about architectural engineering and the way that the course might have differed or included some topics that you weren't really prepared for or expecting, can you tell us what exactly in architectural engineering is? Like, what is the framework for the degree?
Good question. So architectural engineering is primarily focused on, or solely focused on, a building. As compared to civil engineer, you can do almost anything in terms of if you do road, bridge design, or if you do construction management. Architectural engineering is focused on the building itself. And so architects don't like when I say this, but I will say it anyway. So my apologies in advance. But architects make the building look pretty, and architectural engineers make the building work. So what that means is you can take the path of structural engineering and focus on structural engineering. You can take mechanical design, so heating, ventilation, air conditioning systems, and you design those systems so the building is cooled and heated appropriately. You can take lighting design, where, you know, the aesthetics and the, I don't want to use technical terms because most people will not know, but the intensity of the lights, depending on the type of function it is, if it's dining or if it's a classroom or something like that, you need different types of lighting in there. Acoustics, if you're in a recording studio, the type of materials you need for the sound to sound perfect versus if you're in a classroom is very different. So you can do acoustical engineering. And you can also do construction management. So ultimately, it's just all of the things that's focused on pulling a building together. Your coursework is built up of those different components. You can also do electrical design. That was one of my classes too. But you take those different levels and then you can choose a specialty based off of what it is that you're most interested in by your, I think it's junior or senior year. You specialize in one of those different areas. But ultimately, it's just focused entirely on the building. That's what it is.
Okay. So if I remember what you said correctly, when you went into IIT, you were still thinking of going into design to some extent. Is that right or no?
I wouldn't say that's entirely true. I would say when I left St. Lucia, I was working for a civil engineer, and the last project that I was working on, I was doing construction management for them on a project site. Okay. And I really enjoyed that aspect of the field, to be out in the field and making sure work was done according to the design, but also being able to understand the theories and the concepts behind why things were designed or drawn the way they were was also very intriguing for me. So when I started, when I went into IIT, I knew, hey, I don't want to be an architect. I want to do this architectural engineering field because I think it's intriguing and interesting. But I had a very strong inclination knowing what my specialty would have been in my freshman year, my first year of college, that I was very interested in construction management. And so my first internship I looked for in the States was in the construction management field to validate in some ways, do I really like this? Am I really interested in this? The other thing that was interesting for me to just confirm, like I assumed that, you know, construction management was a much bigger scale than what was in the Caribbean. And so I, you know, there's a stigma associated with construction management. When you hear it, people think of like, oh, it's not that sophisticated and it's dirty and grimy. And I had an inclination that wasn't exactly what it was in the States, but I didn't know that for sure. So I started again with the idea of being curious and asking questions and doing research was what I did when I graduated of my associate's degree to determine like, do I want to be an architect? I took that same approach and I started asking questions about the space and learned that, you know, construction management, the construction industry, it's, if memory serves, it's like $1.4 trillion. The industry is worth $1.4 trillion. So not million, not billion, trillion. And recognize that it was a major contributor to the US economy and that you could actually be a construction management professional where there's a path to leadership and success in executive and C-suite roles in that space. And it wasn't just the dirty, grimy mindset that people had. And so after my first internship, I realized like, hey, this is really cool. I really like this and I'm intrigued. And I just continued going down that path. Even if I was pursuing a degree in engineering and design, I think very early on, but because of the exposure and the research I had done up until that point, I knew at that point, I was pretty set in this is what I wanted to do at that point.
Okay. So you mentioned internship and it's not something that I don't think we've talked about that much on the podcast so far. Okay. So a little bit about like, what was that process for you? Like did you get an internship in your first summer?
I did not get an internship in my first summer. And so that's a good question. I tried mm-hmm. really But I didn't. And it's not uncommon for a freshman not to receive an internship in their first year. I think there are a couple of things at play here. So it's important to understand in the US, there's a cycle. There's a cycle in which companies get their money for then what they call a fiscal year. And it usually starts not in the middle of the year, not like a typical calendar year where you start like January to December. It typically starts anywhere between June and September. So as an example, fiscal year of 22 started in July of 2001 or 2021. Sorry, you know. Right. And so companies usually know that they get their funding for their interns for the next summer, so summer of 22. Like actual, like June to August of 22, they get their funding this year. Mm-hmm. So they start to hire for those students between now, which is the fall in the US, now till December. And so that's the cycle students you just need. If you want to get an internship, that's the cycle you get it. And I didn't know that, like first year coming in, No, like that was the hiring cycle. So that was the first thing that I would say worked against me in being able to get an internship my first summer. The second thing was, so the question was like, what did I do? What did I do to
you? Yeah. What was your experience?
Man, that's a loaded question. The reason it's a loaded question is because at the time when I was looking for an internship, Illinois Tech, their career fairs was primarily based in looking for internships for students that were interested in design. And At the time, I wasn't interested in design. Even if I was pursuing a degree in it, I knew the knowledge would be helpful to me in my career path, but I wasn't going to go sit in an office and do calculations. That was not my goal. Unless I went into construction, go to my first internship and realize it was not for me, and then change my path. So I had to go outside of the career fairs to look for my internship. And that's where the concept of networking became my biggest friend or biggest ally. Mm. Where I reached out to somebody in the construction, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any contacts. I didn't have a buddy. I didn't have a dad, a mom to call and be like, hey, do you have somebody? You know, I know that. So I went to the career office and I said, hey, do you know anybody in this career, like this construction management space? And they said, yeah, I know this guy who sometimes looks for students here, but because most students are not interested in this area or specialty, he doesn't come here to recruit, but you can give him a call. So I called him. I networked a lot with the National Society of Black Engineers, and I told them what I was interested in and met people and just asked for opportunities. And I would say I went through several networking events where I got access to people and just told them what I was looking for. And then the process of learning to tailor a resume was also an interesting skill set that I had not done before. I had we call them a CV, curriculum vitae, I think, in the Caribbean. Which is a lot more extensive than a resume. So that was another thing that I had to learn. So first it was building a resume, then building a network, and then just putting myself out there. And it was really uncomfortable and really hard. But after doing that for several months, I was able to land an internship for the following summer. So it wasn't an easy path, then it was trial and error along the way, but I think those are the key things that I did to get one.
Okay, great. And I'm sure that that played a huge role in then getting a full-time job after school, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I can talk to that, but yes, that's out of the question later.
Okay. So, we've been talking about this. So you did have in the back of your mind that you wanted to go into construction management. You had some experience back home before moving. So what was that first internship like? How did it, solidify the fact that that is what you wanted to do? Or, you know, maybe you saw a few things that you didn't like too much. What was that experience like? And then from there, you can go into the next steps of securing a career path in construction.
Yeah, so my first internship was interesting in the sense that I got put on a project for the University of Chicago. So that was my first internship, and there's an interesting thread there with the University of Chicago, which is why I mentioned it. So yes, my first internship was at that school, and I worked for 3 months the entire summer, and I was in between the fields. So I was working on site with the superintendent and also in the office with the project managers. And I got a distribution of responsibilities where I got to understand how to manage quality control on a site for a big, I can't remember the dollar value. I think it might've been $30 million, like 30 million US. So be able to understand like how you manage a schedule and quality control on site, and then be in the office and see how you look at the design and make sure subcontractors are adhering to the design with the products that they're manufacturing or fabricating. And I think ultimately what I liked was the ability to manage and organize the different parts and pieces and how they come together and when they arrive, because I didn't know it at the time, but looking back on my career to date, I have an affinity for organizing things and executing things and making sure things are sequenced properly. And that was the appeal for me. I didn't know it at the time, and I couldn't put words to it, but now I can articulate that's what it was, because that's one of the skill sets that I have. And that's one of the skill sets you need to be successful in this type of role or type of space.
Got it. Okay. So mission accomplished. This is what you wanted to do. And then now leaving IIT, seeking a full-time job, which can be another heartache as an international student, I know. What was that like, and how did your previous experiences help you in that?
You know, you noted an interesting point that I forgot to mention. Mm-hmm. When looking for an internship, companies don't hire interns just to give you experience. Mm-hmm. They hire interns to be able to create a streamline of young professionals coming in to help with the diversity and also to be able to create continuity as people progress through their career. So the intention of most companies when they hire interns is so that they hire you full time when you graduate. That's the goal, because there are several people that will take successive internships 1 or 2 years in a row and then hire on of the company full time. So that being said, taking that into account, a lot of companies are hesitant or were hesitant to hire me. And I know several other people that face that. I'm sure you face the same thing too, to hire me, because ultimately they knew they would have to sponsor my visa for me to be able to work full time. And that sometimes is a tall order to ask somebody. So I, with my first internship, I forgot to mention this, but I got an ally that advocated for me, because I had a friend who was trying to get me a job with his company. When I say friend, it's somebody that I built relationship and rapport with while I started that networking process that I mentioned. And so after maybe several months, maybe 6 months to almost a year, because it was the following year I got the internship, we built rapport and a friendship where he was trying to get me a job with his company. And he just wasn't being successful because they knew that ultimately if I came to work for them, they would have to sponsor my visa. And so because of that, he connected me to another person that he had a friend at another company, and she became my biggest advocate. She was a woman, she was a person of color, and so she became my advocate, hearing my story, and seeing that I was so determined and I was hardworking, she became my ally and advocated for me to be able to get my foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got my foot in the door, then all I had to do was just to show them like, hey, I have good work ethic, I'm worth the vet. Unfortunately, that's not how it panned out, but because they still knew, they didn't want to offer me a second internship because they knew again, hey, we still need to sponsor her visa, and they just didn't want to do it. So that was heartbreaking, but again, turned out to be a blessing in disguise in the sense that it was a big company in the US, enough that the fact that I just got an internship and experience from them was enough to get me the second one. And so the second one was easier to get because I had that experience. And I also had more like my college degree. And then I also had experience from back home. So that just built on each other and compounded on each other. The second one wasn't easy to get. I don't want to make it seem like, oh, because I got the first one, it was easier, but it was still hard because I still had to make a case and I still need to advocate for myself and show like, hey, I'm worth this. I'm worth the visa sponsorship. But by the time, I would say, by the time I had to get a full-time job was a walk or a cakewalk. Like it was a walk in the park. It was so easy because of how hard I worked and how hard I networked and learned the process in the system for me to get a full-time job. By the time I was ready to graduate, I had 3 job offers. Which was not the case when it came to internships. Just learning the process and the sequence, it did help. And then learning the strategy and the right time to introduce, because you have to also be strategic about when you introduce that information of I need visa sponsorship. Going through that process during the internship process helped me understand the right time to introduce that information. So again, it wasn't easy, but you had to be strategic, and it took a lot of hard work, networking, and taking a lot of rejection along the way.
Yeah, I really think we need to talk about that more because it's such a very specific problem for us as Caribbean mm-hmm. students or anyone international going to the US, or I would assume to any other country, but specifically the US immigration system is its own beast. So yeah, it's really important to know a lot of these things because it does affect what you decide to study. It affects, you know, what kind of career you can have after you study if you plan on staying in the US. So
yeah,
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and another thing I wanted to add, like you brought up another good point. Another thing that I don't know if it still exists right now, but when I came up on an F1 visa, you could have worked on what the US calls OPT for a year, you are on an F1 visa. But if you had a degree in STEM, then you could have worked for up to 3 years on that work visa or that student visa. And that was a great opportunity to build rapport and to show people you have a great work ethic and you're worth the investment for the visa, for them to try to sponsor you into the next phase of being able to stay in the US.
Mm-hmm. And that does still exist as far as I know.
Yeah, so that's an important thing that people, to your point, like if it's in a STEM degree, you get 3 years as opposed to if it's a non-STEM degree, then you only get a year to mm-hmm. work.
Very good point.
And it's a very tight, like a year is a tight timeline to convince somebody to make such an investment in you, because it really is an investment.
Yeah, and even for you, 1 year of experience, it's great, but you really don't start to develop yourself in a professional setting until, you know, you've done a couple years at least, maybe.
Yeah, settled in. I agree with that. I 100% agree with that.
Keep listening. We'll be right back after a short break.
Here on Pathways by Grenadian STEAM, one of our key goals is to help expose students to the various career opportunities that exist for them. and to give them the resources they need to explore their own interests and forge a path forward. That's why we're offering current students and members the chance to join one of our podcast episodes to speak directly to someone who's currently working in a field they might be interested in. Searching for a mentor can be hard, and we want to help you get the answers that might just put you on the right track for the next step of your academic or professional career. If you think you or someone you know can benefit from an opportunity like this, send us an email to our team at pathways@grenstem.org. That's pathways@grenstem.org. Let us know what field you're interested in or who you would like to talk to, and we'll set it up. Listen up for student spotlights like this on our upcoming episodes.
And we're right back to the conversation.
Tell us about some of the experiences that you've had in construction management since then. So full disclosure, I also worked in the construction industry, for those listening. So I know that the construction industry can be, you know, very volatile, just on your mental more than anything else. What are some of the high points that you've had, low points, you know, lessons that you've learned that you've cherished over the years in the industry?
So you are right in what you just said. Construction industry it's very taxing. It can be very stressful and very demanding. Everything is schedule driven and budget driven. Anything that takes longer than it was supposed to, it costs money. So there is a high intensity around it. And then also you're building big buildings, buildings that are tall, that you require lots of equipment for. And when you design a building, you go through the design process, you're designing a building in its static state. So its end state, the way you do your calculations and how you design beams and all of those things is based off of a static, the end point. When it's in the progress or progression phase, it's dynamic and it makes it more dangerous. So that being said, there's high risk in terms of safety, people's safety, and then also just the stress levels, the schedule, and the budget. So those are all the things that makes it very demanding. But at the same time, I would say it also makes it very rewarding too. So if you can power through it and make it to the end, I know personally for me, it is super rewarding when you end a project or you hand the keys to a customer or a client and you say, I contributed to that. I recently finished a behavioral science lab and museum exhibit, and it was an empty space. It wasn't a new building, but it was a build out in an existing building. And we took something that was empty and we made such a beautiful space, and it was an arduous, long, stressful process to pull all the parts and pieces together. But the day I revealed this space to the clients and they walked in, they were so happy. They were so grateful. The enthusiasm, it was worth it. It was so worth all of the stress and the pain that went into it because of I helped bring that to life. Like I led the process to bring that to life, and that was very rewarding. A lesson learned, and I think that's like a good nugget for any life experience, regardless of the path that you take, is to own up to your mistakes. So I will give you a fun little story.
Okay.
So this was my first project out of college, also another University of Chicago project. And it was a 800 bed residence hall. It was a $155 million project. So $155 million US. And I was responsible for the concrete and structural steel scopes of work. So essentially the core and shell of the building. And I was responsible for looking or reviewing the shop drawings, which are essentially very detailed drawings of rebar for anybody that's listening, or reinforcement for the, you know, the foundational structure that supports the building. And I missed something. Like, I was reviewing it and I missed a very important piece of steel or rebar that was supposed to go on the, go into the foundation. It was either in the drawings or it was a markup from the structural engineer. Again, it's been a while, so I can't remember the exact details, but I just remember there was a miss. And it became known to our senior project manager. So he comes to me and he like taps me on the shoulder and he's like, "Hey, Priscilla, you have a moment?" And I was like, "Yeah." So he pulls me aside and he starts asking me the questions about like that foundation piece and the reinforcement. And I'm answering to the best of my ability. And then I realized, like, wait, I made a mistake. And so I had a choice. Do I own up to this? Or do I lie and say something different? And I was in a predicament where I was like, if I lie, and I was being dramatic, it probably wouldn't have happened, but like, this could have failed, and it's highly probable, like, it could have failed. I was like, I either lie or I tell the truth. I'm like, either way, I'm getting fired. I'm getting fired today. I'm getting fired. I mean, long story short, we realized that it was a miss and it wasn't only my fault. There are other people that could have caught that. And so it wasn't my fault. And so I shouldn't have taken on all of the responsibility or the weight of the world on my shoulder. And then we ended up coordinating with the structural engineer to come up with a repair. But I think the moral of this story, what I'm trying to allude to, was I made a big mistake. I thought I was gonna get fired. I owned up to it, even regardless of what I thought was going to happen. And I was scared as hell, but then we owned up to it. And then there was a fix. So I would say that's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in my career. And it's translated through up until fairly recently, where I just am a strong believer and proponent for taking responsibility and being accountable for your actions and your decisions, and then deal with the consequences after. Nobody's perfect. Nobody knows everything. And the quicker you realize that and you own up to your part, then the better of a team player, and the quicker you can come to a solution, as opposed to the blame game, which is also something that's very common in the construction industry, where people point fingers and nobody takes responsibility or tries to solve the problem faster than they're more inclined to blame you and not take responsibility than try to solve the problem, which ultimately is the better approach, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And you're right, that is like a life skill to have, or a good tip for life. Because in such a like a people-centric industry that construction is, that kind of thing builds trust, right? Because then people, even if you made a mistake, sure, but then people understand that, oh, she's always gonna, you know, own up to her issues and be open and transparent. And at the end of the day, it's really beneficial for the whole project. So, yeah.
And you also brought up a good point of building trust. Another thing to say is that, and I think I alluded to this in like one of the statements I made, you'll never know everything. So it's also okay to say, I don't know. It's all okay to say that, but you can either say, I don't know, but don't just end there. I don't know, but let me find the answer. I don't know, let me look into it. And go look into it, because that too will help people build trust. Because if you own up to something and you make up an answer, or you lie, or you try to, you know, fool people, it's only gonna backfire. Because at some point, if it does go wrong, then they'll notice it and say, well, you said this, and that's not what it ended up turning out to be. And then at that point, you also degraded the trust that you could have built. So yeah, two things: own your mistakes, and also it's okay to say, I don't know.
So true, so true. So we've talked a lot about like the difficult times, like whether it was through school or finding a job or dealing with these stressful situations at work. And it's always easy to talk about it in hindsight, like, yeah, this is what you do, you know, like you focus and you, these are all the right answers. But we all know that's not how it is in the moment, right? So let's talk a little bit about the tough times when you're in it, when you're in the trenches. Yeah. What are some things that have worked for you to get through those moments?
So I'll tell you what are some of the things that helped me and then some of the lessons I learned in retrospect. Because as you said, it's easier to look back and be like, yeah, that I could have done that better. Mm-hmm. So I would say for me personally, and this is maybe a crystal-ism, I am just very, very determined. I am stubborn as hell. And if I set my mind on something, then I will not give up until I get a semblance or a version of it. And so as an example for me, I don't work for a construction management company anymore. When I graduated college, I was determined and thought that, hey, that is the path that I'm going to take. And one day I will be a leader in some capacity in that sort of organization. Unfortunately, that's not how things panned out for me. And we talked about visas, and I, you know, to be a little bit vulnerable, maybe not get into fully my story, but I didn't, after my student visa came to its completion or its expiration date, I wasn't fortunate enough to get my application wasn't selected to move forward. Mm-hmm. And so it was heartbreaking and heart-wrenching, and I would say it put me into a tailspin of being in the middle of the trenches, being at a very low point where I felt like a failure. And I felt my identity was so tied up in my job and my work. And the thing that helped me, as corny as it sounds, to have, and at the time I didn't have a huge tribe or community to support me, but I had at least one person in my circle that when I would come up with all of those judgments and negative self-talk, she would interject and she would put that in check and say, look at some evidence in your life. Yeah, this one thing didn't work out and you had no control over it. But look at all of the different things that you've done in your life and accomplished to date that speaks contrary to the thing that you're saying, like you're a failure. How is that true? So looking for evidence in my life and looking back to all of the things I accomplished to that point was helpful. And having a person in my life that had my best interests and loved and cared about me and put that in check helped me through those tough times. In hindsight, recognizing and learning to cultivate my self-talk in the sense of being able to extend myself grace and be more compassionate to myself was also another thing that it would have made dealing with the hard times a lot easier. Than when I was in the middle of it. That being said, those things compounded on, I'm just so determined. And I was like, well, okay, if I can't get this path, then I'm going to find another way. I don't know the answer, and I will figure it out. And so that was another thing for me that served me, where I was like, okay, it's not it. I currently don't work again for a construction management firm, but I'm still in the construction management space. So I had to pivot, and recognizing that things don't go as planned, but being able to still work towards a goal or a vision or a semblance of something was better than me just not doing anything at all and just throw my hands up in the air and being like, okay, I'm out, I'm done. This is too hard. The reality of it is that life and success or anything that you want to call it is not a straight path, and recognizing that, you know, there will be setbacks along the way, and it's how you deal with it, it's how you choose to overcome it, because you are so much more than the last mistake you made or the last failure or the last thing that didn't work out. It's always being able to recognize that life is perfect. You have highs and lows. Everybody goes through it. Like, nobody will go through this life without having a moment of adversity. It's just the reality of it. Nobody talks about that in a very clear, transparent way, because we as a society, whether it be back home in the Caribbean or in the US, people hide the hard times. People want to like, okay, no, I'm just going to deal with my shit. I'm going to deal with my stuff in private. And when I'm celebrating and when I'm succeeding, then I'm going to post it all over social media and make it seem like, you know, my life is great. But the reality of it is that's not the truth. The reality of it is everybody goes through it. So to just summarize what I said, it's giving yourself grace, giving yourself compassion, recognizing it's okay to pivot. It's okay because things don't go as planned, but pivoting in a way that serves you and is right for you, that still ultimately supports a vision for you, great. And if it's pivot out completely to something different, I'm a strong believer in everything happens for a reason. It sounds cliche, but I really believe it, because in so many instances in my life, when something didn't work out, like I was so determined for it and it didn't work out and I got another opportunity, it turned out to be better than I thought it would be, but I was envisioning it for another space. So pivoting and doing something completely different may be the right path for you, but embracing that and just keep going and having people around you to encourage you and support you in that process is helpful too.
So well said. And I don't want to gloss over all of your response, because it's something that's been coming up so much more, just the idea of protecting your mental space and that focus on your mental health. And you spoke about it a lot with the like giving yourself grace and the negative self-talk. And it's not talked about enough in the Caribbean for sure, and in the US as well, especially in like minority and Black communities. So I want to like focus on that, because it has been coming up so much in different conversations I've been having, how critical that aspect is. And I just want to like point that out as something that, honestly, if you don't pay much attention to it, it will eventually come around to being a disadvantage, because there'll always be that hurdle of needing to cross over that self-talk and that internal energy that you have, for lack of a better word.
So. Yeah, no, I get what you mean. And it's 100% true. And I don't want to misspeak, but I know there's like a lot of research and science around, you know, the way that our brain is wired, and it's wired because of, you know, our ancestors, and they had to be in survival. So the way we pay more attention, our brain is just wired and built to pay more attention to the negative. And that's just how we are built. And because of that, I think understanding that aspect too, of just learning how your brain works and knowing how you're wired, also helps me too. There are several other things that I did. I would do like affirmations in the morning when things weren't going well, and just anchoring and being grateful. Also a lot of research to support when you focus on things that you're grateful for, even if it's small. Now, I'm not even kidding you. Sometimes I'd wake up in the morning and I would just be like, all right, I'm grateful that I'm alive. I'm grateful that I have food on the table. And anchoring to those very simple things, and the more you look at it, like, and then being able to recognize like, oh, wait, I have 5 beautiful, amazing nieces that love me regardless of what's going on in my life and regardless of my career status. They love me. Like, how can I lose sight of that? And those sorts of little things also gave me joy along the way to help with my mental state, to be able to reframe and refocus and take or pursue the next step or the next right decision for me at the time. So yeah, mental health, strong advocate for it, positive self-talk. Yeah, I think it's so important, so important.
So important. Okay, so at this point, we're trying something a little bit new with Pathways, where we'd like to invite current students to join the conversation and, you know, ask their own questions in a space that they're interested in. So at this point, I want to invite Mia, who's on the call right now, to introduce herself.
Hi.
Hi, Mia.
Hi.
Okay, so Mia, I'll let you introduce yourself just to Crystal and the listeners, let them know who you are, what you're doing at school. And then I know you have a couple questions that you probably want to ask her, so you can go ahead with that.
Okay, my name is Mia Nichols. I'm currently starting my second year in TAMCC. I am a physics, pure math, applied math, and business management major.
Yeah, right. That's about it. Cool. Okay. And you are interested, I know you have some interest in architecture and math and project management. Is that right? Okay. So I think you caught a little bit of the end of the discussion with Crystal, but go ahead. If you have a couple questions that you like to ask her, what is it?
The first question I wanted to ask was, what's the most rewarding thing about your career?
Good question. So I got my degree in architectural engineering, so design, and then I went straight into construction project management, or that space right out of school. Do I regret not going into design? I personally don't, because as I mentioned at some point in the interview, I'm very good, like some of my skill sets are being organized, being able to sequence things in a way to get it done. I'm very good at getting things done. My skill set is just execution. So I personally don't regret it. When you work in the design space, it's very, and I noticed that when I worked in St. Lucia, you can very easily work on a project in design that never gets built because the customer just doesn't have the money for it, or you can't get approvals from the governing bodies in the country or the area. And that creates, in my mind, it's like you develop this whole thing and this design and you just can't execute it. And I personally get a sense of satisfaction for being able to get things done and to build things into reality. And that's the thing that's most satisfying for me. And to answer your question about what's most rewarding for me, sorry, I jumped the gun here. I recently got to work with, it might be sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I'll say it anyway. I recently got to work with two Nobel laureates that work at the University of Chicago, to help build spaces for them to continue their research and help provide, you know, research and insights and contribute back to the world of economics, which and behavioral science, which I think is really cool and interesting. And I played a part in that. So I think to answer like what's rewarding about my job, I get to be part of building and creating spaces for people that are doing big things in the world.
You said that because you were like very much into organizing things, that's why you chose that career path. But there are like other jobs that are good for people with good organizational skills. So why did you choose that particular job?
That is an excellent question. I think I chose this because I was already on the path. Like I was already on the path since secondary school. I did technical drawing, building technology. And I thought I wanted to be an architect, but it wasn't a straightforward path for me in the sense that I thought that's what I wanted to do. And the more questions that I asked about you know, the specifics of what it entailed to be an architect and the skill sets that you need and the things that really drive architects and what makes them passionate, then I realized, hey, this is, really isn't for me, but here are other things that I'm good at that I'm still interested in and intrigued by or still have a passion or interest for, and I can integrate those skills. And that's how I found it. So, and to answer your question, it was pulling parts and pieces from several different areas and skill sets that I had and things that I was interested in, and also doing research and realizing like this was a path that could be a viable one for me. Could I have, to your point, like, could I have done and something else? Absolutely. I could have done something else. I could have gone a different route. But I also think to be realistic in my answer too, you know, I'm coming from the Caribbean, however you want to say it. And there's only so many paths for us. You know, the barriers are real. They really are real to be able, I am a believer that you can do anything you set your mind to. Like, I truly believe that. Anybody that can, you can set your mind to it, you can achieve it. But the barriers for people like us coming from the Caribbean are real. And so I thought, and I believed at the time, that the most strategic way to get me a path to a better life and opportunities that are not available back home, I needed to be strategic. And the idea was to do something in engineering. And that's how I ended up there. Was it passion driven or purpose driven? Probably not. But I am also not a believer in the cliche of follow your passion. I also don't believe in that either. So it was a combination of things, but it was very strategic and practical for me.
Okay. Another question. When you were in secondary school, you said that's when you figured out essentially what you wanted to go into, right? Did you ever change your mind or have any doubts? Not particularly like from architecture to architectural engineering, but from like a completely different career path on a whole?
Never. I'm being dramatic. Yeah, all of the time, including, and to be honest and transparent, including recently, probably before I started this new job. I'm in this new job that I'm in now for maybe a year and a half, a little bit over a year and a half. Prior to that, I really questioned if I even wanted to stay in this industry or if I wanted to pivot out of it altogether, go back to school, get a new degree and do something differently. So the questions and the doubt will always be there, I think. I don't think that you'll ever figure it out, but it's being open to exploring a path. And if it doesn't work out, make another change. I would say when I first started secondary school, I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I had a cousin that was studying something related to IT. And she talked about like, oh, there's a lot of money in IT, so you could do that. So then I thought of like, oh, maybe I can do computer science. Like, that would be cool. And then when I came time to choose my subjects, I was like, all right, I chose this path, so let's just go down the path. And again, it's just kind of how I'm wired, and some people are not that way. I can be very focused, again, when I set my mind to something. So I was just going down this path and then being strategic and practical along the way, and that's how I ended up doing what I was doing. But to answer your question, the questions and doubt always came, maybe not for me in a university, but I know people face those questions and those doubts at university too. For me, it came after. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
It does, thank you. You said that you had people like telling you that this is where the money is at, you should try here and here. How did you deal with different people telling you different things, and how did you like navigate that to find out that architectural engineering was what you actually wanted to do?
Good question. I think I needed to do my own research. So everybody could say like, hey, this is where the money is at. But by the time I got, like when I got here and I was studying architectural engineering, a lot of people weren't an advocate for doing construction management. I don't know if you heard the part where I shared when I was looking for my first internship. At the time, my university, at our career fairs, they weren't hosting construction management companies coming in. Like all of the firms that would come in were all for architects or different types of engineering disciplines. Nobody was coming for construction management. And I was like, well, that's what I want to do. So I'm going to go look for it for myself. And I went to look for it. And then eventually, I guess enough people over the years gained an interest and momentum. And that's when they started bringing in construction management firms to the career fair. So I think there's merit and warrant in listening to what other people have to say, because people have experience and recognizing you don't know everything. But at the same time, do your own due diligence, do your research, and also sit with yourself. I think a lot of times people are so interested in looking for answers outside of themselves that they don't listen, pause, stay still, be quiet, and see what feels right for them. We're so focused and based in a world where it's all about your head and your logic and not sitting with your intuition. I also believe in trusting your intuition. There are several times and examples in my own life where my gut tells me otherwise and I don't listen to it. And when it does happen, then I'm like, you know, she don't listen to your gut. So I think there's no straightforward answer, unfortunately, Mia. I think it's a combination of things, but you also have to pull in people that you trust and respect, like mentors. I had a lot of mentors along the way. I still do, people to guide me that are far along in their life or in their career and probably face things that I'm facing, not probably, that have faced things that I'm facing or a similar version of it. And they can advise me on what to do. But ultimately the final decision is left to me on how I want to approach it. So it's pulling in information again from several different sources, but deciding what's right for you after you've gotten a chance to assess it. Because you have to leave with the decision, not anybody else. Like, especially, and I'll say this because I know that I've had friends, especially when I was back home in St. Lucia, where, you know, they wanted to study something and their parent was like, no, this is what you should do, and was completely against this thing. And then this person pursued what their parent wanted them to do in lieu of what they wanted to do, and it wasn't satisfying for them. So if you know that's what you want, sometimes you have to go against the crowd and do what you know is best for you or what you think is best for you.
Do you think that if you had, like, say, an internship, like, right after secondary school, before you went off to university, do you think that would have helped you, like, to determine what you wanted to do sooner? Or
I think, so a couple of things to clarify. I did not go to university right after secondary school. I went to community college back home. And while I was in community college, I had internships too. So I had an internship after my first year and an internship after my second year. And then I worked in St. Lucia for 3 years. So all of those things I would say helped me, because as I mentioned, I wanted to be an architect. And if I had gone to university straight out of community college or even high school or secondary school, then I would have gone down the path of, hey, I want to be an architect. And I probably would have not done as well, because architecture is based more in design. And that's just not where my skill set is. I can't conceptualize something and sketch it on paper. I can reproduce a sketch. So I don't think I would have been successful in navigating to where I'm at now, if I hadn't had those different experiences along the way.
Okay. I'm gonna have to cut in right here as we're running out of time a little bit. But Mia, thank you. Those are some really great questions. All right. So Krisla, I'm gonna round this out with my last question. Make this, I won't say I'll make it easy, but
I'm scared.
What is a piece of advice that you would share with someone, you know, in Mia's stage or in a younger stage coming up? And you can frame this in a way as being a piece of advice that you wish you had received at a younger age.
That's a hard question. I think in many ways, it sprinkles through the entire theme of everything that I've shared, where nothing is a straight line. Like, you make a decision and you think it's going to take you down a path, and it's possible or very likely that it will change or there will be a setback. I think the overarching advice that I would give Mia and also my younger self or anybody is to have a growth mindset, like being very curious and recognizing, hey, I need to ask a lot of questions and figure it out along the way. And even if I don't know this answer right now, then I can figure it out, is the overarching thing that I would say, to be open-minded. Because again, I think, you know, even in secondary school, when you're choosing your subjects, they make it seem like, oh, this is your life. This is your life. And you need to have it figured out at 15 years old. Like, this is what I'm supposed to, like, no, but like, what? No. No.
Yep.
No one has it figured out at 15. Some people are 60 and they still don't have it figured out. Like, let's be real here. So I think just understanding that you make a decision now based off the next best right step for you, based off of the circumstances and information you have right now, but have some level of forward thinking towards what it is that you're trying to achieve. And then even if it's not that exact thing, then you can pivot along the way to still work towards an ultimate goal. So if you say you want to, putting a very audacious goal out there, but if you say you want to cure cancer, then ultimately you know that the things that you need to focus and study around is based in the sciences, and maybe questioning, why do you want to cure cancer? Like, what does it mean to you? Understanding those different nuances, that also helps you work towards that. Because if you don't have a vision or a semblance of what it is you're working towards, then you're just like floating or swaying in the wind or have no guiding post. And I think that's another thing that I wish somebody had told me, just have a semblance of what it is that you want to do in the world, because we all have something to offer. Regardless of where you come from, your age, I think we all have something unique inside of us that we can give to the world. And if you can focus and orient to something, then you can do great things, even if it's in your home country.
Perfect way to wrap up. And like you said, that is really applicable to someone at any age, to be honest. 50 or 50.
I'm following my own advice, let me tell you.
All right, Christelle, thank you so much. It's been a really great conversation. I'm glad we finally got to connect in this way. Yes.
Likewise. Mia, it was lovely meeting you.
Lovely meeting you too.
All right. Thank you both. And to the listeners, thank you for joining us on today's pathway.